The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Dear listener, please close your eyes for this movie theater meditation brought to you by Fandango. Breathe in. Smell the fresh popcorn. Now exhale. Open your eyes and proceed to the best seats in the house you reserved on Fandango. Recline. Now, download the free Fandango app for movie times, tickets, and seats at your favorite theaters. Fandango. It's your ticket to the movies.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Gold for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock.
Ready? I got my hair cut way too short. I didn't mean to. It just kind of happened.
It's looking good.
It just kind of happened.
Yeah, it's not that short. I mean, yeah.
I said, give me the Chris Sims.
Yeah. Oh, I would love to see that. Maybe that's a bet we need to make going into the summer. I'd like to see them take it down to about the skin on the side. Let's see that. That would be a good look for you.
No,
not going to happen.
That's actually not bad. I could live with that.
You could deal with that? You could go blonde?
That's better than your fresh-cut Gomer Pyle look.
I know. It's a big discussion in my house, my Gomer Pyle look and what I do. Most of my family wants me to grow my hair out. They're sick of it short. Oh, Christopher, you have such beautiful hair. Why do you keep cutting it like this? That's what I'm hearing a lot in my house. So I'm going to have to make a decision here soon.
Wait, who are you hearing that from? Your wife or your parents?
My wife, my parents. I mean, pretty much everybody. My sister, everybody in my family has pretty much given me crap about my hair over the last, 6-7 months.
You've been doing that for a while now. And
I
we
know.
See an old clip every once in a while, or I'll be looking up an old story on PFT, and there'll be a clip of us from a few years ago. God, we've changed.
I know, right?
But it's amazing. You don't think about it at the time. Well, why would you? But Now I'm self-conscious a couple of years from now. When I look back on clips from now, I'm going to think, oh, God, what was wrong with those guys then? We look great now. Those guys were ugly. We look great.
Seriously.
But you had some long hair.
I did. I had some hair that was all over the place. So I gotta figure out what I'm going to do. I think I'm going to ride the short hair Gomer Pyle haircut out for the summer. And then when we come back after our break, training camp, all that, I'll start the – grow out, and I'll try to look better for my wife and my mom so they like me more.
Well, that's the key. You got to keep them happy.
Got
those
to.
Are the only two members of the audience that ultimately matter. By the way, we communicated about this yesterday. I still don't want to talk about this, because once
scared?
I talk about it, I have no, I can't. It's one thing to say, oh, I'd get up on the mound and I'd groove a first pitch right into the glove. I'd make the catcher pull the glove off and go, man, that was something.
That was heat.
And then comes the email from the Pittsburgh Pirates offering me the opportunity to put my money where my mouth is. And I saw that yesterday, last night.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where it was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I want to do it, but oh no, I don't know if I really want to do it.
I don't.
Yeah,
I want to talk about the fact that I can do it.
Right.
I really don't want to do it. I really don't want to do it. And then they made the mistake of sending it to you, and you're like, yeah.
Come on, you got to do it. You got to do it.
Well, negotiations are happening.
All
negotiations
right,
are ongoing.
Like I said, if it gets done or something and the date works, I'll come out there. I'll go to the game with you. I've been dying to see that Pittsburgh place, that stadium. What?
Wait a minute.
What?
You're already on record as if it's the Yankees games,
yes.
July 5 and 6,
yes.
You're coming.
Yes.
I've already told them, if you can get July 5 or 6, Sims will be there too, in full Yankee regalia.
I will. I will. All right, I'll be there.
But we'll see. We'll see.
All
right. It's just 100 miles up the road for me. It's no big deal. I can go up anytime. I haven't been in that stadium in a while. I've been there a few times. I'm surprised.
You don't get out much.
Be interested because, number one, I don't get out much. And number two, I have been very clear in my position that once Sid Bream scored from second in the 1992 NLCS, former Pirate
stubborn.
Sid Bream, who went to play for the Braves, and Barry Bonds, for some reason, couldn't throw him out on a routine single, that's when I knew that that team that they had carefully constructed that had made it to the NLCS in 91, got back in 92, I knew it was over. Bobby Bonilla, gone. He became the Mets' problem.
Still getting paid.
Still is every still is every July 1. Barry Bonds would be gone. It was going to be over, and I just had no idea it would be 30 years later, still waiting, not just for another World Series championship, but something more than a one-and-done. Do they still do that one-game playoff?
Yeah.
They still do that? I hate that one-game playoff because whoever has the best pitcher advances. It's automatic. You check the box.
Yeah, there's a little advantage there for sure. But it gets more teams in. It gets the fan base, you know, excited. Hey, our team's in, and then they do it, so – I don't know.
And then two hours later, they're out.
Yeah, well, yes.
162 games. 162 games. We made it to the playoffs.
I don't like the one game
by lunchtime, we're out.
Right. I don't like that because of that. Like you just kind of said, it's like if you boil it down to one game when it's a sport about series. And like you said, it's just, oh, you go one game, it's, you know, the pitcher. So, all right, let's talk about football. Either way, maybe you'll break their curse if you go there and throw a strike on the first pitch. I want to be in the stands booing you and heckling you while you do it. So we have
great
like openings for the show for the rest of the year.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah. I am confident that I could go to the local baseball field right now, climb up on the mound, and groove one right down the middle, no problem. You throw the, you know, you're in the middle of the stadium.
Yeah.
There's people there. I mean, and the whole, and if it's, you know, it's like, hey, oh, yeah, Yankee game, Crystal comes. Like, oh, there's going to be a lot more people at the Yankee game. I'd rather get a game when no one is there.
Yeah.
Give me the 1 o'clock Wednesday afternoon game against, you know,
Reds.
A bad team when there's 500 people there, and then I'll go do it. But negotiations, as I said, are ongoing. I love, when I was a kid, and that's, I need to do it for the sake of the nostalgia, because when I was a kid, I mean, it was every morning, open the papers, study the box scores, Pirates. When I was growing up, used to sit with my grandfather who would listen to the games on the radio, Bob Prince. He had a Tupperware container that he would stick a paper towel in to spit his mail pouch tobacco juice into.
Love
sometimes
it.
He'd
Love
hit
it.
The mark. Sometimes he wouldn't hit the mark.
Right.
Granddad was in his 80s then, and wherever he spit the tobacco, that's where the tobacco would land. Sometimes he did get it in the Tupperware, and sometimes it would end up on his sock. But I remember those days. Bob Prince, legendary. And it was a great radio and baseball. That's the thing. Radio and baseball is a perfect match.
It is a great
football
match.
Football and TV is a perfect match. And that's why football overtook baseball. Because football is better on TV than baseball, plain and simple.
Well, it is. It's more exciting. Baseball's got a few issues, definitely as far as appealing to the younger crowd, that they got it fixed, no doubt about that. But it's a great sport. And why don't you this summer, all right, go in your pool for the first time in 3 years in Chateau de Fleurieu.
It's ready now.
Okay.
It's ready now.
Go in. And, like, what's great and what I love about baseball is just having it on in the background. Put it on the TV. Just let it just, you know, it's like radio. Oh, well, a long fly ball? Let me look. Let me see what's going on. Oh, a big pitch here? Okay. And then you turn away for a little bit. That's what's great about it.
I still, every once in a while, trip across a baseball game and maybe I'll start watching baseball now. Maybe I'll start covering baseball. Maybe that'll be bye-bye football, hello baseball. There'd be plenty of people out there that'd be very happy to get me off of the football beat. People at 3:45.
Baseball starts on NBC on Sunday.
That's true.
Right?
You know, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
That's like
we're pubbing. We're pubbing. We're pubbing NBC baseball.
we're not talking about hockey anymore. I don't know. You've been away for a while. We don't got hockey no more.
No.
But so we can talk about baseball instead. All right, let's get to football.
All right, let's do it.
Let's begin in Philadelphia. Jalen Hurts, whose status in the eyes of the organization, in the eyes of anybody who pays attention to football, elevated once the team made the commitment to go get his close friend, A.J. Brown, last Thursday. Here's Jalen Hurts from yesterday talking about having support from the likes of GM Howie Roseman, as evidenced by the trade, and head coach Nick Sirianni.
That's what they say, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's understood, you know. It's my opportunity. It's my team. It's pretty much what it is, you know. It's my team, so I'm ready to go. And the work has been put in to go out there and achieve what we want to achieve, and I think this being the time for us to come together and spend time together and do all those things, we're still building. You know, we're not going out there and playing the game tomorrow. So there's always work to be put in. And any day that there isn't work put in, that's a day missed. That's an opportunity missed. So that's just been the mentality of us. And everybody knows that. And that's every individual on this team.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the right attitude. And there's no questioning Jalen Hurts' leadership, his intangibles, the things that you bring to the table that elevate the players around you. The question is, can his play elevate to the level where he's regarded as top half of the league?
Yeah.
He's not top half of the league. And it's hard to get into the top half of the league.
It is. You said
Jimmy G can't get into the top half of the league.
Right.
There's a lot of great quarterbacks now. And I have been toying with this idea that the Eagles – are attracted to the notion of having a quarterback who's your franchise guy, but he's not a franchise guy that you're paying $50 million a year to so you can have money for A.J. Brown and other players. But if A.J. Brown's presence helps Jalen Hurts play better, that's right. When he puts himself in line for a better contract. So the better the team is, the better the quarterback plays, the more the quarterback is going to expect. It becomes
inevitable,
cycle
almost.
That keeps spinning and churning.
Right.
And if you have a really good team, ipso facto, we have a really good quarterback, even if we deliberately have engineered the team around a quarterback who, without all this help, without all these great players that we can afford because the quarterback isn't sucking up a big piece of the salary cap, he wouldn't be as good.
No, you're right. It's a cycle, though, you know. But, yeah, you have 2-3 years like that where they are good and you go to the playoffs and the quarterback, whether, you know, he's played extraordinary, superstar, whatever – the fan base, yes, is going to go, wait, this guy's good. We're going to the playoffs. We got something here. So, yeah, that's where it gets interesting. And Jalen Hurts is, I think, one of those guys that's going to be in that conversation. I think you said it right, Mike. I mean, we're always talking about Jalen Hurts, the human being, and how impressive he is. And that goes pretty much like standard protocol down the line for everybody you talk to in Philadelphia. That's where it's like, I think it's easy for them to back him because they know he's going to do the right things, work the right way, bring the team together like he's talking about, never miss a day or an opportunity to get better. And that's why you love that guy to be your quarterback. And you can deal with the guy like that to be your quarterback. Okay, yeah, he's got some issues throwing, but he's got all these other things that check the box that we really, really like. And the throwing part, we've seen guys get fixed, tweak a few mechanics, get better and better. So they're hoping for that, and they're going to continue to work on that with him. And we've seen improvements. We've seen improvements. We just know it's not where it needs to be quite yet. That's what the playoff game pretty much answered for us last year against Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and next step is getting back to the playoffs and getting a win, maybe winning the division. And the Eagles are a team that – when you look at the off seasons of their competitors in the NFC East, they're a team that isn't resting on their laurels,
no doubt.
That isn't trying to just tread water. They're trying to get better. At a time when the NFC is wide open, we've seen I hadn't even thought of that because it happened so fast last week during the draft. After all the movement of great players from the NFC to the AFC, we had two go from the AFC to the NFC on Thursday.
Yeah, you're
Hollywood
right.
Brown and A.J. Brown reversing that trend, although it's not enough to really change it yet. It's not moving the needle back the other way, but it is something that allows the Eagles to say, hey, the Cowboys have been struggling to keep their team together.
Right.
They're on paper worse than they were last year. Washington, who the hell knows? The Giants work in progress. Yep. The Eagles have an opportunity to win that division this year.
I'm ready to go.
Streaming now only on Peacock. Five rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you need for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
Speaking of the Giants.
Yeah.
Yesterday, Joe Shane, new GM. And before I got to any discussion about their draft picks, and they had some fascinating draft picks that we will discuss in a moment, I wanted to ask him some specific and direct questions about the Daniel Jones option, because I'm still fascinated by the thought process that goes into, he's our guy, he's our guy, this is our guy, you have to have a quarterback, we have a good one. Fifth-year option, nah, I'm kind of full. I'm kind of full from the risotto. Like, no thanks. I don't know how you reconcile the two. I don't know how you, because if he's your guy, 22 million isn't all that much for one more year. 22 isn't all that much. And if he does really well, you're looking at, I think, 34 million franchise tag next year. So I'm fascinated by the decision to not pick up the option for Daniel Jones. Here's some of the conversation I had yesterday with Joe Shane about that decision to not extend Jones' contract for one more season.
Yeah, the 22 million. I mean, that's a large number, but again, we're excited about working with Daniel. We're happy where he is. This isn't an indictment on who Daniel is as a person or anything like that. We're really happy with what Daniel's done for us throughout the process when we've had him over the 3 months, getting to know him and being in the building for 4 weeks now and the offseason program. And we like everything he's doing. We're excited to work with him. We just thought that was the best decision right now for where we are moving forward. Again, we're excited to work with him. We've upgraded the offensive line. We like some of the weapons that we have around him. And again, we want to see Daniel be able to put his best foot forward. And I think we've done that this offseason, but that decision was just what was best for us right now.
There was more there, too. I kept after him on a couple of things. And at one point, I asked if it wasn't guaranteed fully at exercise, if this was pre-2020,
yeah,
and it was guaranteed for injury only, would you have picked it up? And I got the feeling he hadn't really thought about that, and he said he didn't want to deal in hypotheticals. And
right.
I think they would have picked it up.
I think so, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
They did a calculation. And as I've said before, and I've written this at PFT, what they did is they bet against Daniel Jones. We talk all the time about a player who bets on himself. They bet against him. They bet that he's not going to be good enough that they'll say, we're glad we have this $22 million commitment. I also asked him about whether or not they looked at other situations as cautionary tales, whether it's the Browns with Baker Mayfield, the Panthers with Sam Darnold. Do you look back at the Bears with Mitchell Trubisky, who didn't pick up the fifth-year option and were happy that they didn't because he didn't play well enough in that fourth year for them to even think twice about keeping him around the following season? And he said that really wasn't any of it. Look, they're trying. I also asked him, are you just thinking this is a carrot that you're dangling for him to have a big season? They're happy if he has a big season. Good problem to have. He agreed with me. It's a good problem to have. He said, no, he doesn't need the extra motivation. So I'm just fascinated by this because at its core, this is a team that is not willing to bet $22 million on avoiding the possibility of having to pay $34 because they don't think he's going to be good enough that they're going to look at $22 million for 2023 and say, we're happy that that's all we're paying our starting quarterback, because $22 million is not that much for a starting quarterback.
All right.
That's what fascinates me.
It's in flux, you know. That's where it is. I don't think it's betting against. I think that's a little harsh to say that. They're not betting against the guy. They're running a good business. They're doing something smart.
They're hedging. They're hedging.
Right. Well, listen, it's still $22 million. All right. That's three starting players on your team, you know. So you got to make sure he is that guy to go forward. You know, there are the cautionary tales, like you explained. I mean, whether it's...
But it's going to be five starting players on your team if you have to franchise tag
him. Well, okay. All right. Well, they're willing to take that, but they don't know yet. They want him to be that guy. They want him to be the franchise guy and to have to pay him $35 million. That's why they drafted him there. It's a little bit like Jalen Hurts in the discussion, at least in my opinion, of just going, wait, he checks the box in so many areas. And really, in some of the areas where we don't check the box, yeah, he's been at fault, but damn, have we and Dave Gettleman done absolutely crap to help him out. So that's where it's like, I don't think they're not even sure how good he can be yet. There's an unanswered part there, and I think that's fair. And I know we've talked about this a lot, you and me, and I know you'd agree with me in a lot of ways. It is. It's hard to get a feel. I know he hasn't been perfect, but it's been three offensive coordinators. And as I tell everybody up here in New York, like, it wasn't just a bad offensive line. It wasn't just bad. That's where people are there. Everyone's just like, well, it was a bad offensive line. Like, it was one of the 10 worst. No, it was absolutely the worst. Like, not even close. There's not another team in the discussion for how bad their offensive line's been the last few years. So that's where, you know, they want him to be the guy. I think. I do. You know, but they got to see, and it's a new coaching staff, and he's got to prove it to them and the new GM, too, that he's the guy, too, there. And I think that plays into the fact also why you don't give him that, you know, guaranteed money 2 years down the road.
I'll be posting after the show the full interview at PFT. Yeah. You can find it now, although we would prefer that you not go look for it now at the youtube.com/NBC Sports page. Watch the show. I'll take care of you afterward. I promise. I'll go have my coffee. I got a big sugar cookie my wife bought me the other day. It'll require me to take a nap by 10:30. But before then, I'll post about Shane's comments because he lit up. He lit up.
Right.
When I used the good problem to have phrase.
Right.
If Jones has a big fourth year and they have to deal with it next year, he said it's a good problem to have. You've also got the franchise tag if you need it a year from now. That's a gamble. I'd say it's an $8 million gamble, or you're talking to his representatives and you're trying to get an extension. And he pointed out that Jones is represented by the same guys who represent Josh Allen. Mm. So they worked with Josh Allen
when
Shane was in Buffalo. He believes that they'll be able to work something out long term if Jones has a big year. But here's the reality. Here's how it works. Very simple analysis.
Yeah.
If you have to tag the guy, the tag number drives the contract. The tag number determines what the contract's going to be.
Right.
That's the starting point.
Yeah.
And if he has a really good year, he may want more than the tag as the starting point. He may say, put me right in the middle of 40 to 50 million. Put me at 45, 43, 42. Who knows? Salary cap keeps going haywire. But I still think he's at $8 million. That would put the franchise tag at 30. Franchise tag for quarterback was 29 this year. There's no way it's only going to be 30 next year because it's driven by the increase in the cap.
Right.
I think it's going to be 33, 34 million next year. So it's about a $12 million. It's at least a $10 million gamble, and they're happy to lose it.
Right.
They will be thrilled if Daniel Jones plays so well that they got to pay 33, 34 million. But they avoid the problem of a year from now being the team that's trying to offload Daniel Jones and his $22 million fully guaranteed salary like the Browns are trying to do.
Right.
And the Panthers the Panthers aren't even trying. They know there's no point.
Right.
We're just keeping this guy.
Right.
No one's touching Sam Darnold for all or part of 18.8, so we're just going to keep him.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And I think that's why it's good business. You know, that's and I understand, like, it is fascinating because we don't see quarterbacks in this spot that much. And still the vibe and the talk is positive about Daniel Jones out of New York. So I understand how you think it's fascinating because it is. It's they say all the right things. And then over in this corner, you're like, wait, but they're not doing the right thing by him financially. Well, okay. All right. Well, they you know, we explained it. We talked about it. There's issues there. And I think it is smart by them, especially with the new regime in there, to get a feel for the guy and know what he is. You know, I was listening to Brian Daboll yesterday. He was talking about Daniel Jones, and he's still getting a feel for what he likes offensively, and he wants him to have ownership. So they're getting that bind and that bond. And then hopefully it shows on the football field, and he can prove he's the guy, or he can get the money, you know, to back up that he's the guy. But I really think just from even being in the Giants building last year for one day during a training camp, talking to a lot of the coaches there over the last 2 years. And they think Daniel Jones is the man in a lot of ways. They really do. So I this is a guy that, yeah, they're doing this business-wise, but I think they're really rooting for and want him to be, you know, the face of their franchise for years to come. And two, you know, I don't think, even if he has an amazing year this year, I don't think it'll be enough still to go, I want $45 million a year or anything like that. You know, I think there's still a line of demarcation there that, you know, you got to go more than just 1 year flash pan thing here to get that kind of money. At least that would be my two cents. Yeah, maybe not. I know.
Josh Allen did it in year three. Well, Josh Allen ascended enough in year three to get himself to the top of the market. His first 2 years didn't. His first 2 years were better than Daniel Jones' first three, though.
Thank you. And that's what, and people, wait, I hear this a lot, and I'm glad you brought me this. Year two, Josh Allen threw 20 touchdowns and 10 interceptions, and they went to the playoffs, and he was rushing for, he almost broke the record for 100-yard games rushing in a row as a quarterback. So there's a difference there.
That was rookie year. Second year he didn't have that. That was rookie year.
Either way, second year was 20 and 10, and they went to the playoffs. I know that. So, yes.
But he was really good as a rookie, too.
He was
really good as a rookie.
He was. We saw that. We saw some stuff. Daniel Jones, we're not to that extent. We've seen some stuff here. But now, hopefully, he's got some support and an offensive play caller like Josh Allen did that can put him in a spot to really show all the skills he has and hopefully can. Where I was getting to as I was blabbering is – Daniel Jones is the key to all this. The fact that they know he's mature enough, professional enough, and I think realistic enough to understand the scenario he's in, that's what makes this all possible and be able to be smooth. That's where I was getting to. I'm sorry, I'm blonde, it's early, and I couldn't get to it.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. Okay. Trust me, I've sat here through worse.
Shut up.
Wondering what the hell is he trying to say. But you're right. You're right. And they don't think he's going to be flustered by the fact that he's not guaranteed the fifth year. And he said himself he's got responsibility for the way things have gone so far in his career. So they do believe in him. And they have accepted the fact that if he's really, really good this year, it's going to cost them.
Right.
But again, it's a good problem to have. That means they have a great quarterback. If you have a great quarterback, you got to pay a great quarterback. They would rather have a great quarterback and pay a great quarterback than not have a great quarterback and not pay a great quarterback. And what they're trying to avoid is the possibility, and this is where I say they're hedging. They don't want to be in a situation where they don't have a great quarterback, but they're paying $22
million. Yeah.
That's what they want to avoid. Sure. And it's hard to blame them. When you look around at other examples, it's hard to blame them for that. All right. Jones was the sixth overall pick in 2019. And remember that year they had another pick in the second 10, and there was a lot of criticism. Oh, you could have gotten him later. You could have gotten him later. Remember, people went nuts about, you could have gotten him later.
Right.
Well, this year the spread was a lot tighter. Kayvon Thibodeau went fifth. They could have gotten him at seven, or maybe they couldn't have. I spoke yesterday with Shane about that aspect as well, more in a broader conversation about Thibodeau. We're going to play some of it now. You can see the whole thing at PFT, but here's some of the conversation about the decision and the reality that they took Kayvon Thibodeau with the fifth overall pick.
Yeah, there weren't many negatives going through the process. Again, just everybody's different, you know, in terms of personality and how you are in certain settings. So he's a guy we spent a lot of time with. You know, from the combine to, you know, taking him out to dinner at his pro day to bringing him in, Zooms with him, you know, FaceTime. So we spent a lot of time with him. You know, he's always had good grades in school. He's never been in trouble. He's a hard worker. He had an ankle injury this year. A lot of people that are going to be high picks easily could have hung it up and called it a season. And, you know, but this kid fought back. He practiced through it, eventually came back and played late in the season. So, yeah, you know, for whatever, you know, the draft season and the misinformation that gets out there, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, we did a lot of research. We felt comfortable with the kid and, you know, we obviously were comfortable with the player. You know, we think he's going to be a good fit for us.
Chris Sims and I interviewed Thibodeau Super Bowl week, not in person via Zoom like this, but I got the impression he's very gregarious, personable, smart, funny. Does that factor in for you, knowing the market you're in, the exposure the players will have? They got to be able to hold their own dealing with the media. Does that become a factor for you, especially for a high profile pick?
Yeah. And I think it does for every team. You know, I was, you know, when I was down in Miami with the Dolphins, that was always something. Can he handle South Beach? Will this kid be able to survive in Miami? How will he be in, you know, that scene? Okay. And then you go to Buffalo. Some people are, hey, that's the ideal place for him because there's not as much going on, or a player. So whichever team you're in, whatever city you're in, you always take in the environment, the outside surroundings. You got to think, you know, will this player be able to succeed? You know, will football still be important to him? And again, Kayvon's from LA. There's plenty of stuff going on in LA. He grew up in that environment, you know, big city. And, you know, I think he'll just be fine in New York. And, you know, we were comfortable with that fit.
Makes a lot of sense. You got to consider the market, consider the city, consider Definitely. The distractions, consider the issues. And he will be a magnet for the media in New York because he gives good quotes. He's an interesting guy.
Right.
More people are going to want to talk to him. They're going to have the right plan, strike the right balance, because you do want to market your guys.
Yeah.
If you have a guy who is very, very good with the media, you want to put him out there. If you have a guy that isn't so good, you steer the media requests away from that guy. That's part of managing your team. That falls under the umbrella of the PR department. But the GM needs to be concerned about that as well. The coach needs to be concerned about it, because you get some guys in awkward spots, bad interviews, bad sound bites. It just it adds to the issues you don't want to have to deal with. But with Thibodeau, I don't think they're going to have that problem. He's going to be really good. And I just wonder how it goes if he has a bad game and he gets some questions that are either expressly or implicitly critical of him.
Mm-hmm.
Will he be diplomatic, or will he push back? We may get some good moments out of it, but I don't know that there's a balance there. There's a balance there. You don't want Jim Everett pushing the table over and jumping on Jim Rome. not that I'm suggesting that Kayvon Thibodeau would do that, but I'm saying there's a balance there. But he seems like a guy who will defend himself if he feels like he's being asked an uninformed question, a question that's unfair to him. I don't think he's just going to take it and move on to the next question. I think he'll push back, and I think he'll be able to hold his own. That's what fascinates me about how those interactions could go if he struggles at all, either this year or really any year that he's in New York.
Agreed. I mean, he seems like he's smart and, you know, quick-witted, got, you know, response. I mean, he fits New York in all those areas for what Joe Shane said and what you're talking about. He's going to thrive in front of the camera. The spotlight, none of that's going to be a big deal for him. There's no doubt about it. And even if he gets questioned, I think, you know, and does have a bad game like you're talking about, you know, I don't think it's going to – I think this is a guy that's pretty smart that way. He'll understand how to talk to the media and do the right thing. That's where he really, I mean, has made a name for himself over this whole draft process. Listen, we could debate about the player. Certainly, you know me. I hope I'm wrong. I was questionable about the pick at number 5. The personality is also debatable in the NFL world. You know, again, there's a lot of this where, hey, the Giants love him and they see all the great things about him. You know, but there was other teams too, and this is where I'm a little worried about it. Not that he can't handle the media of New York, but can he handle all the directions New York might pull him into? And one of the big things that was the question about him for a number of teams always when I would talk to them was a little bit of, man, it's everything but football at times. I think that's what's scared. He's going to be a businessman. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. And I think that's what bothered some teams about him a little. Other teams look at it as a positive, and, hey, he's great. He's smart. He's doing all these other things. You know, we have some old school teams that are just going to go, wait, I just want a guy that plays football and doesn't worry about all these other things, at least not yet as a rookie. So that's where it's also going to be interesting, I think, with the player. I think the personality can handle New York.
We do have the capacity as human beings to multitask.
No doubt.
We are permitted to have multiple interests. And this isn't a criticism of you.
Yeah.
It just it annoys me that there are people in the football world that think, and this is part of the idea, we want the robot who comes to work,
right,
punches the clock, does what he's told, punches out, goes home, and sits there with the battery pack being recharged for the next day and does nothing else.
No, I know.
It's all football and nothing else. And look, if you're a quarterback, you need to be more invested away from the facility because you're spending more time, I think, studying film, more time getting acquainted with the playbook. For a defensive player who's job assignment is going to be far more narrow than a quarterback. Now, it's not, I don't want to boil it down to go tackle the guy with the ball. It's more complicated than that. You need to know what the assignments are of yourself and the guys around you.
Yeah.
And some defensive players know the assignment of everyone else on the field. But I still think there's room.
You're right.
And if you're smart and you're a quick study, you don't have to sit there for 3 hours and spin your wheels to figure something out. You can figure it out in a half hour.
No doubt.
And then you can go do something else.
You're right.
And I think it's good for a person's mental health to not be all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. So I think these are all positives. It's all in how you spin it.
Right.
I think these are all positives. But I talked to Shane about it as well. And again, you'll see the full interview at the YouTube page or on PFT. And we can't play all of it here because we want to talk about it. But the idea that somebody outside of the top 10 was really stoking the notion that he's going to slide out of the top 10 because they wanted him. And,
Joe
had to laugh about that. He knows that's real.
Sure.
Sometimes the biggest culprits when it comes to the spreading of misinformation about a player are people who want to draft him very badly, and they don't want to have to trade up to get him. So if you don't want to trade up to get him, if you can grease the skids for a slide and he's there, mission accomplished. It's very Machiavellian, and they're never going to tell the truth about it, especially if they get the kid. Hey, oh, boy, we're so glad that all those lies we told about you worked so we'd be able to employ you. It was brilliant by us. Sorry you're making $5 million less over the next few years than you would have made if you were drafted higher. Sorry that you didn't get to go to the team you wanted to go to and you're going to us instead. But from our perspective, hey, it was great. We told just enough lies about you, and just enough suckers in the media pushed it to their audience under the guise of anonymous scouts that we were able to get the owners of a couple of these teams in the top 10 to not want you. So thank you for playing along, even though you didn't realize you were playing along.
No, I mean, we know that goes on 100%. But I also think
Work in Dallas.
Yeah.
Well, didn't work in Dallas.
No.
Who was number one?
I hear you. You know, but I think there was a legit conversation with this guy. I think he was, you know, a little polarizing that way. And to your point, listen, you can be like Kayvon Thibodeau, and you're exactly right, do both. We've seen that. Hey, Michael Strahan, I don't think he was like, you know, and once he got a spot in his career, he was able to do both. There's no doubt about that. Justin Tuck, O.C. Umenyora, all of that, no doubt.
Hey, Tiki Barber.
Exactly.
Tiki Barber was the king of it.
It's very capable. But every coach in football has been burned by that guy too. And that's where there's the cautionary tale. Every football coach in the NFL has had that same guy and gone, gosh damn it. I can't get this guy in here to do work or do anything because now he's doing this and he's doing that and he's doing this and he's doing that. And we don't do any extra drills after practice or anything because he's already wants to run in the shower and get dressed because he's got a business meeting to go to. So that's where it scares people, and it shouldn't. It's you know, like you're saying, it's not apples to apples. Not every human's like that, but we know how coaches are. They're ultra conservative, and when they've been burned by a guy like that before, it scares the hell out of them. And I think he scared some teams in football with that stuff, and then other teams absolutely loved him. And the Giants obviously were one of those teams.
What was Phil's approach to being the Giants quarterback?
Oh, my gosh,
was he the
Phil?
Football robot who came home and plugged into the wall
Definitely.
And went back the next day?
Phil was like the kind of guy where you're like, hey, dude, you got to get a life maybe and stop being such a robot. Like, you, it's okay. Go out in the backyard and walk around the yard a little bit. Do something. Yeah, because he was total robot, total psycho. I mean, it was the same routine always. And as I've told you, I mean, win or loss – you know, that would determine how, you know, Sunday evening would go and Monday and Tuesday, just the attitude of the house. You know, they lost. The robot was pissed off. They won. The robot was a lot happier.
Shane and I had some laughs about that Cowboys draft board that Jerry Jones put up for the media to see. And we talked about it yesterday. I convinced Shane that he should be rooting that when a week from today the schedule is released, the Giants play the Cowboys week one. So he can take Thibodeau and Evan Neal over to Jerry Jones before the game and say, you had these guys as one and here's two one on your draft two. Board. I got them in Giants uniforms.
How about
enjoy.
Them? How
enjoy
about
the
them Giants?
Today. Yeah. How about these Cowboys?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. That is pretty amazing. It really is. I know. That's really one of the issues with him holding that paper up, is the fact that if the Giants have success and these two have success, it's going to be like social media shade thrown at the Cowboys all the time about all that happening.
Especially since there's two.
Yes.
Not one.
Yes.
I mean, think of that, how it fell. Thibodeau and Neal to the Giants. Thibodeau and Neal, the top two players on the board for the Dallas Cowboys. And part of what Shane talked about also was the psychology of going defensive line first and offensive line second. And, hey, they really wanted Thibodeau. They were afraid that somebody was going to trade up into the sixth spot to take Thibodeau.
Gotcha.
That's why they went Thibodeau at five.
Yeah.
They thought somebody was going to pop up there and grab Thibodeau. So take Thibodeau. We're fine with Evan Neal or Ike Ekwonu. And I think he's not going to come out and say, well, we really preferred Ekwonu, but we got stuck with Neal. They wanted Neal.
Yeah.
You heard it.
I heard it. They wanted Neal. Yes, yes. Right.
They got their number one tackle and their number one D lineman. And, and look, it's there's nothing sexy about it because these guys don't touch the football. They're not going to be on anyone's fantasy team except in those leagues that have defensive players on them. But offensive line.
Come on. You
line.
Said. You know
offensive
it.
Line.
Right.
Defensive line.
Right.
2007 Giants. 2011 Giants.
Yeah.
I know Eli Manning stepped up in the clutch.
86 Giants. 90
I know
Giants.
Others did things.
Right.
But when you have the offensive line and defensive line.
Yes.
That's how you lay the foundation to have a great team.
No doubt. No doubt. That's what the Giants have always been. I think that's been the shocking thing about people in football over the last 6-7 years is even when the Giants went in between the two Super Bowl runs, they still were teams where people would walk on the field and go, oh my gosh, the Giants are big and physical and got some freaks on the field. And they've lost that. And that's where I think they got to get back to. That's what the Giants are. They're the G-men. They're big. They're physical. It becomes December and cold up here in New York, and they're still big and physical, and they whoop your butt. And they've lost touch with that a little bit, and I think they're trying to get back into that category.
Let's go ahead and take a break. When we return, a team that is trying to get or trying to stay in the category where it has a great quarterback, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Kevin Colbert, talked to him for a while yesterday, and the topics included their ability to get their next quarterback at pick number 20 and not get leapfrogged by anybody and not have anybody else taken before they could. We'll let you hear some of what Colbert had to say when PFT Live continues right after this.